Reporting.
White Earth Tribal Government has issued what it calls an urgent public health crisis after 7 drug overdoses, including 2 deaths within 48 hours. Heroin is suspected in some of those overdoses. Reports say the DNR has tracked down and killed a black bear in northeastern Minnesota after it attacked 3 people on Tuesday. 2 men working on a cabin near Isabella in Lake County say they fought off a bear after they were attacked. The Lake County Sheriff's Office says another man was bitten by the same bear after it attacked the man's dog. And the last ocean-going commercial shipping vessel left the Twin Ports this week. That caps off what officials are calling a strong shipping season. Spokeswoman Adele Yorty says the surge in cargo comes from moving the highest tonnage of iron ore in nearly a decade.
To see those shipments of iron ore regain strength and actually boom as they have this year was really heartening for the shippers and the landside crews as well.
The Beatrix is the last official ocean-bound vessel this year, expected to move through the Welland Canal on Christmas Day. This is MNN.
Hi, friends. Tom Lotek here on behalf of Digital Magic in St. Cloud. Now, if a digital Grinch has been troubling your computer this holiday season, you should think of Digital Magic as your Tiny Tim of technology. They'll make everything all right in the end, and you won't feel Scrooged. You might even want to open a can of that Who Hash to celebrate. I'm Tom Lotek for Digital Magic, computers and associated everything you might need. Happy holidays, and God bless us, everyone.
Chasm Weather.
We'll see a few spotty snow showers early this afternoon with cloudy skies and a high around 20 degrees. East winds are around 5 to 10 miles per hour. For tonight, a slight chance for snow showers here late, cloudy with temperatures holding steady, and east winds around 5 to 10. By Thursday, a slight chance for snow showers early on, otherwise mostly cloudy skies, temperatures still holding rather steady with north winds at 5 to 10. Friday, mostly cloudy and a high of 21. From the WeatherEye Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on AM 1150 KASN.
Thank you, Jennifer. Our high right now, 16 degrees. Our temperature on our way towards 20, it sounds like, here on your Wednesday morning. Appreciate you joining me. We are running a little behind, and for that, I apologize. 7 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Reminder on Sarah's Party Lawn sponsors, big thank you to West Central Sanitation and Atlas Chiropractic. We now head back to Shady's Hometown Tavern and Event Center. Focus on farming, continuing on, and it's Chasm Farm Director and the Belle of the Ball, Joe Gill. Joe Gill.
Why, thank you. I've never been called the Belle of the Ball there, Kirby. No monster cookies for you today, that's for sure. Hey, it's our second hour of our Focus on Farming live broadcast from Shady's Hometown Tavern in Albany here on Chasm Radio. The second hour here, we're going to break at about 10:30, so we got about 22 minutes here where we're going to be looking for questions from the audience. If you have a question, concern, issue you want to bring up, just raise your hand. Travis will have our microphone. He'll be going out and about. Just mention your name, where you're from, and maybe who you're addressing the question to so we can properly address it for you and answer it. And first of all, Travis, I'm going to have you start off and hand the mic to Kevin Papp. He is president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau. He's in attendance as well, making the trek from near Lake Crystal. And I know, Kevin, thanks, first of all, for being here. Second of all, you were just recently in Washington, D.C. for quite a few days, correct?
We were. We had all of the 50 state Farm Bureau presidents as well as the Puerto Rico Farm Bureau president in our policy process. Resolutions Committee put together a report of policy recommendations that we'll give to our national delegates at our American Farm Bureau annual meeting, 99th annual meeting in Nashville here in January.
So other issues going on. I know you're busy meeting with USDA one day. I know Sonny Perdue, who's been very visible. He's made his way to your farm as well this past summer, too. And what was that conversation like? Issues? Were you talking NAFTA? What were some of those conversations?
Well, we were honored to host him on our farm. And, of course, the first two questions farmers want to talk about is the weather and the crops. How did the crop turn out? A lot of talk in D.C. about taxes. But, quite frankly, farmers today aren't looking for tax exemptions and write-offs. We're looking for profitability. And that went right into trade, the importance of NAFTA, the importance of protecting what we've got, and also the safety net of the Farm Bill.
Kevin, do you have a question legislative-wise, industry-wise, for anybody on the panel this morning?
I do. What's your favorite Christmas food?
Oh, boy. Hard-hitting question from Kevin Papp this morning, everybody. You got one, Michelle?
Anything I don't have to make.
Wow.
That was pretty sly to slide into the discussion of dicamba.
Speaking of which, Commissioner Fredrickson, recently I know the soybean folks have had a task force, and Joel, maybe you can comment here, begin this conversation too regarding dicamba. The task force, I know Bob Wirth, I spoke to him quite a few times from Lake Benton, Minnesota. And they've really, yourself as an organization, obviously affects you, the soybean industry, and been very forthcoming on getting some answers and possible solutions. Correct, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. We set up a task force to look at this issue. Obviously, the dicamba and the dicamba beans are an incredibly valuable tool for farmers facing resistance issues. However, we can't have another summer like we had last summer. We kind of realize that, you know, our farmers want to be good neighbors. They don't want to see this product drift the way it did. We've seen a lot of areas where, you know, we may have had a farmer that didn't respect the buffer. That may explain the first 20 or 30 feet of drift, but it doesn't explain the next 100, 200 to a mile of drift. And, you know, we needed to take a look at this. We had the industry folks in, got their viewpoints. We had a diversity of farmers in, talk about their viewpoints, and came up with a recommendation to the Commissioner of Agriculture to keep this product available for next year, but hopefully see a lot less problems with it that we saw, so that this product will be able to keep being used. I believe Commissioner Fredrickson was pretty blunt with us in the meeting, saying that, you know, if we have another summer like last summer, that this product won't be available for use in Minnesota. So we felt it was very important to come up with some immediate, intermediate steps there that we can keep this product available to face the weed pressures we have.
Joe, it seems like the issue really, Dave, as we move to you, the onus has come on the farmer a lot, the producer. They've kind of been the focus of this situation, but here in Minnesota, it seems like we've come up with a path to move ahead and some possible solutions, even though you're going to have to kind of work on the fly as well.
Yeah, I let the record reflect that I was the one that brought dicamba up, right? Foolishly. Yeah, we're going to have to work on the fly, and obviously a no-spray date was the issue that concerned a lot of people. I know that there are co-ops that are concerned about losing that last 10 days in June, but those are the most vulnerable days to crops. And we just, as Joe has indicated, we can't have a year like we had last year. There were 250,000 acres, a quarter of a million acres that were impacted by dicamba or by spray drift. And we can't have that. As you know, one of the industry reps said, well, that's nothing compared to all of the soybeans that we grow in Minnesota. And as an old friend of mine is used to saying, we measure in the aggregate, but farmers don't farm in the aggregate. They farm individually. And so the operators and owners of those 250,000 acres were impacted. We can't have that again. And so we established a June 20th date. Our neighbors to the east and south and west Wisconsin did nothing more than the federal label. Iowa did nothing more than the federal label. South Dakota did nothing more than the federal label, which doesn't establish a no-spray date. North Dakota established June 30th, and Minnesota established June 20th. I don't know what our neighbors, you talked about corn on the Canadian border, Tom. There's soybeans in Canada also, so I'm not sure what our neighbors in Manitoba and have done, but you get a sense of what's going on across the trade area right now. So if we have a late spring, you know, this is a commissioner's order. It's, you know, the commissioner can change that as we get into a situation. Based on normal growing conditions, this should work. Our weed scientists say if water hemp is under normal conditions, should be at 4.5 inches by that time. And if that's the case, I'm not a weed scientist. I go with the science, and that's the approach that we choose to take at the department. We'll see how this all turns out. It's a one-year shot, the special label, and I would encourage folks to read the label. It's not what's on the bag or box, however. There's 40 pages under the federal label, and so read it. A lot of it doesn't apply to our crop up here, so it is readable. I've read the label at least twice. We took a lot of time, a lot of time visiting with people. I appreciate the farm organizations weighing in on it. I appreciate that immensely. you know, the Farm Bureau was concerned about it. The Farmers Union thought we should get rid of dicamba, and the soybean growers came in the middle. And so we were happy to work with them. It reminds me of the story about the three actuaries that went out deer hunting. The deer went by. The first actuary jumped up and shot and hit 20 yards ahead of the deer. The second one jumped up and shot 20 yards behind the deer, and the third one jumped up and said, "We got him."
Oh, thanks, Dave. Paul, you want to follow up on those comments as well?
Yeah, thank you. And I should say, I don't raise the dicamba beans. I have a liberty, so I have no iron in this fire. But I'm not so sure the June 20th date is going to work in a state like Minnesota, where we go a long ways from north to south. And, you know, you can get a later year, but guys have to plan what they're going to plant now. They have to order their seed. And, you know, the soybeans may mature according to the sunlight, things like that, but the weeds don't always follow that same pattern, and you're going to have some late escapes in some of these fields. And if you have dicamba beans and can't spray dicamba, you know, the end of June, first part of July, we may have some escapes that don't get taken care of because they're resistant to Roundup. And I'm just concerned that, again, I would have preferred to see that July 1st date like North Dakota had, but we'll see how it goes this year, and hopefully the farmers can work around that and not let those weeds escape.
Let's kind of focus on the legislative session, which is going to be right around the corner here. And Michelle, let's begin with you. Are there going to be some priorities? I know Paul mentioned we're kind of seeing those budget forecasts and seeing a negative number there. Where do you see this kind of starting or kind of predicting what kind of session is ahead of us here?
And as a good politician, I'm not going to answer that question right now. I had a couple of other things I just wanted to kind of follow up on. I've been taking some notes. And Dan had mentioned transportation. Initially last year, we did put $150 million a year, an additional $150 million a year, so $300 over the biennium for transportation. So we are trying to address that, and there was some that was focused on rural Minnesota, so hopefully we'll begin to see the fruits of that money. And in addition, Tom had mentioned some just, I think briefly, just some education things. And as chair of higher ed, you know, last year we did put some additional money for ag education into the high schools. You know, not nearly enough, because we've really let that kind of slide in our high schools, both in technical and the ag kind of education. But as chair of higher ed, we've been really trying to make sure that those community colleges, those two-year institutions that are the backbone of rural Minnesota, goes a little bit beyond ag, but it is important to our communities and our small towns that, you know, that support the farmers, that the farmers support. So we need to make sure that those schools are good and solid and continue to serve our people out there. So we did add some additional money. We gave them kind of a, it'll be a two-year kind of additional appropriation to do some work on potentially if they need equipment, expensive equipment, things like that, to improve some of those programs they have. So we did do some of that, and we're looking to make sure that those schools are able to continue the ag program. I know like in Wilmer, they've got that going on there. So we want to make sure those schools are strong too. So I just wanted to add a couple of things. I know I'm digressing a little bit off of the real focus, but I think that just the rural communities are very important too, to make sure that those are strong in addition to that. And I think now I'll answer your question, and I'm sorry. You will get the microphone back soon enough.
You got the mic. I'm not going to stop you or, you know, go ahead.
But, you know, this year, right now, they're predicting about $181 million deficit. We have another, that's the November forecast. We have another forecast coming up in February. And there are some things that, how they handled the forecast that may have slanted that. We're going to have to deal with federal conformity, how the tax bill on the federal level is going to deal. You know, they're passing, someone mentioned earlier, but I'm sure that's why Congressman Peterson can't be here. He's probably having to re-vote on that bill. So, because there was some issue with that, so it had to go back to the House. But, we're going to have to deal with some of those, and those weren't all reflected in the forecast that we're looking at right now. So we will get a new forecast in February, and that's what we'll be basing our budget on. Potentially, there could still be a deficit, and we would have to deal with that when we get there. It won't be as big as we had been dealing with, whatever it was, 10, 15 years ago, but we will be. It could potentially mean some cuts somewhere. I don't favor increasing taxes, so that would not be a choice that I would make in order to fill that deficit. But we will continue to look at, it's also a bonding year, so we'll be looking at bonding. When I first entered the legislature, it was budget year, bonding year, budget year, bonding year, and it was pretty clear. We only did a small bonding bill in the budget years, so that, you know, maybe emergencies, things like that. Now it has become where we do bonding every year, we do budgets every year. It's just kind of, it's ongoing. And but so technically next year is a bonding year, so we will be looking at that. And I know that there are probably additional money for transportation, some building projects. I know that higher ed always needs, you know, a lot of the schools need new roofs, things like that, some upkeep money. So we'll be looking at all of those things as we go along. The opioids, and I've got to, that word is hard for me to pronounce. Like, everybody has that word they can't say quite right, but that's, so we'll probably be looking at that. You probably have heard of the Minlars with the driver's license issue. You know, they've had a couple of hearings on that, and I'm sure that we'll be making sure that that gets taken care of and people are taken care of. So those are a couple of the things, and I can pass it on to Paul, and maybe he has some other things that he would want to add.
I was told the whole licensing thing isn't fixed yet. I spoke to a few people working in the whole industry, and they said, yeah, it's been a bear, it's been a hurdle, and they said they're still not where they need to be.
And no, they're not, yeah. And they will. And so we will continue to follow up on that. And like I said, if there's need to be legislation, I had to have my driver's license because unfortunately birthdays keep coming, and I had to get my driver's license updated, and I was up in Sauk Center on a Saturday morning, and there was a long, long line there waiting for new tabs and things like that. So we need to deal with that. And I know that the buying a car is very difficult right now because of the title issue. And transferring those. I guess maybe the buyer, I don't think, is having as much trouble as the dealerships are having trouble transferring those titles. So we will, I'm sure that will continue to be looked at by the legislature. And like I said, there was a couple of interim hearings that we had to see exactly what we can do on that. But maybe Paul has some other things he'd like to add.
Yeah, before we get to you, Paul, I know you mentioned, Michelle, some of the education-wise and the need for that. One of the FFA students from Albany, maybe Sammy or Aaron or whoever would like to talk, at Albany Schools, you've gone through a referendum and some additions, and just maybe talk about the shop area, some of the expansion there, some maybe more direction on some of those technology areas. If you want to mention what's going on over at the school and some of the new additions and development, if you want to talk about that, Sammy, possibly.
So what exactly do you want me to say?
So some of the new additions... Some of the new additions, like the shop area and such, you guys are seeing expansion and more ability to do more things over there, correct?
Definitely.
What are some of the new things that, if folks have never been over there, what are some new additions that are visible?
We got a paint booth this year, so we're able to do a little more in the shop, and we have a hydraulic car lift, and we have expanded our shop a lot, so we have more classes. Instead of having three classes in an area that should maybe fit two, we are able to actually go throughout the entire like egg area, so that helps a lot.
As you drive on the north edge of the school, you see like all these like service bays. It's almost like a Walmart almost. You have what, three or four service bays over there?
Yeah, I think we have three of them. Three, yeah.
Three of those as well. So, and also talk about the FFA chapter. When I was an FFA member over 20 years ago, we had maybe 10 or 12 members. Talk about the chapter right now. It's outstanding right now as far as membership and what you guys do.
We have 63 members this year. I think it went down a little bit actually after last year. But we have our 8 officers, and then we have our 63 members. We definitely do a lot. We're starting our tractor raffle. Next year will be our first year of doing it. We started for breast cancer awareness this year. We just got done with our fruit sales last 2 weeks ago. We did breakout rooms for Hurricane Harvey victims, so that was great. We got over $300 worth after that for donations down there. We did that for the week after school. We set up for the breakout room that we created. I'm missing something.
I think you got it all. Thank you. Sammy Schneider joining us with the Albany FFA this morning. And Oh, all right. Dave wants to know what kind of tractor you guys are going to raffle. You might have a raffle ticket buyer over here. So somebody talk about the tractor. State your name, first of all, and talk about the tractor, please.
Yeah, I'm Julie Orbeck, and I'm serving as a reporter for our chapter. And myself and Harley Albritton are setting up the tractor raffle for this upcoming fall. We got a Farmall H donated from, I think it's Gutfold Implements something. And we're really grateful for the donation. What we're going to be doing is the advanced mechanics class is going to be fixing up the tractor and restoring it, painting it, fixing everything. And we're going to be raffling it off. And all the money is going to go to the Coburn's Cancer Center to help breast cancer victims and their families.
And the cost of the ticket?
All right, Dave. Dave, any other questions here? You can just write them down and just let me know. Dave would like to know the cost of the ticket as well.
It's still kind of in the process. We're still trying to figure out the little details. So we don't have that detail figured out yet, but pretty soon here we're going to need that stuff.
The reason I ask is...
Okay, Dave, here you go. Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to commit Kevin Papp to 10 tickets.
I'll buy 10 if you buy 10.
All done. All right.
All right. So 10 plus 10 is 20, 25... It reminds me of somebody on the FFA alumni needs to get an application in, too. I don't know who the guy is, but he may be sitting to your left, Dave. So we'll get that all worked out, too, and get that ball rolling. I know Paula interrupted you, but if you want to follow Michelle's comments, anything legislative-wise, you wanted to follow up after Michelle, please?
Well, just a couple of things. A tax item that hasn't really gotten a lot of attention was pertaining to fertilizer containment facilities that our co-ops and the retailers have around the state. And going back to in the 90s, there was a tax exemption, a property tax exemption for those facilities. And as farming changed and these buildings and storage sheds got bigger and bigger and bigger, some counties were giving that entire building an exemption from property tax. And it was not being administered fairly across the state. Well, this past year, the legislature totally took that exemption away from fertilizer buildings and such. And I got an email from, this came from down in Maurer County, and the prior value to their fertilizer shed had been about $400,000, what they paid taxes on. And now losing the exemption, the value has gone up to $1.3 million. So they're gonna be hit with a sizable increase in property taxes. And it was a difficult issue because the towns and cities that have those facilities in their towns need the revenue, but it's going to be a big jump for some of our farm service places to see that tax go up that high. So, and I don't know if there can be some kind of compromise reached to give part of it an exemption, but that's going to be an issue that we see going ahead. And one comment I have on the federal side, again, that tax bill that's going to be, I'm sure, passed and signed by President Trump. I was at the CHS annual meeting last week, and they talked about an aspect of that bill. It's called Section 199, which is in current law allowing these cooperatives to pass on some of their costs to the members, and the members can then deduct those expenses on our individual taxes. Well, that looks like it's going to be taken away in the new tax bill. It's going to really affect our sugar cooperatives and also our large co-ops like CHS, Land O'Lakes, places like that. So we'll have to wait and see if that is in or out of the latest edition of the Farm Bill.
All right, State Representative Paul Anderson joining us this morning here on Chasm Radio as we come up on 10:30. We'll be back here in a few minutes as you break for markets. We join in AgriTalk. Once again, AgriTalk, usually heard at this time at 10:06, can be heard at 6:35 this evening here on Chasm Radio. Coming up on 10:30, Kirby, we'll send it back to you at the radio station. We'll get some markets from AgriTalk, a look at your weather forecast, and be back here for your final segment at Shady's Hometown Tavern, Main Street in Albany.
Some great stuff from Shady's Hometown Tavern and Event Center with Joe Gill and his focus on farming with such a fantastic panel. Another, about 26, 27 minutes to go yet, so don't you worry. We now get that market update from AgriTalk.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Chip Flory in this hot seat today. What's going on, Chip? You've been watching this corn market or what?
Yeah, we've got a little bit of strength in corn today, and I mean, it's tough to get excited when we're a penny and a quarter higher, but hey,
right.
We are moving to the upside today. the fact that professional trading funds are heavily short this corn market has been well documented in here, and everybody's anticipating a bit of a short covering rally into the end of the year. I'm not saying that this is all we're going to get, and we can't forget that the funds can maintain those short positions right into the new year. But maybe we are starting to get some of that much anticipated short covering going in here. And you know, wheat is really kind of the leader in this market to the upside right now.
Look at that! All right,
has got me scratching my head right now, because when wheat becomes a leader to the upside, you got to wonder exactly just how much strength we might be able to maintain in here. But with very little snow cover out in the plains,
that's right? Weather demand, that cold coming in.
Cold coming in this weekend. It's going to be a question of, does it stay cold enough for a long enough period of time to really stress that crop and maybe get some winter kill in here. But wheat's working to the upside, and we've even got soybeans just a touch higher despite some rains down in Argentina and southern Brazil.
Real quick, what about livestock? Any movement there today?
You bet. Hogs are moving to the upside. That's a good sign. Bit of short covering going on in that market. Cattle, we've got some pressure. And this pressure on the feeder cattle market is really becoming significant. We've got a lot of technical weakness going on in the feeder cattle market.
All right, Chip, we're keeping the seat warm. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks,
thank you,
buddy.
So much. We'll be right back with more AgriTalk. Stick with us.
Join 800-plus farm executives in the U.S. and Canada while discovering business opportunities, gaining invaluable insights, and increasing your competitive advantage at the 2018 Top Producer Seminar. During these few short days, you'll hear from nearly 30 challenging and inspiring speakers who will help take your farm operation to the next level. Keynote speakers include Chris Cook, Brian Dodge, and Eric Snodgrass. Visit topproducerseminar.com to view the agenda and to register today.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Grow your incentives, not weeds. Earn an additional $6 per acre in cash back when you apply Xtendimax herbicide with Vapor Grip technology on your Roundup Ready 2 Xtend soybeans, along with endorsed herbicides from Roundup Ready Plus Crop Management Solutions. Visit growyourincentives.com to see your total incentives opportunity. Xtendimax is a restricted-use pesticide. Individual results may vary. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Hi, I'm Scott Steffes, and I want to invite everyone to our next Ag Iron event at the Steffes Group Auction Facility in Litchfield, Minnesota. It's Thursday the 21st. We have a great selection of tractors, combines, hay and forage, trucks, and light construction. We'll be selling in multiple auction rings with exact sale orders plus live internet bidding. There are hundreds of pictures and full details on our website, steffesgroup.com, so check it out. Last time, don't forget, Thursday the 21st, 10 sharp. It's going to be a great day for another Ag Iron event from the Steffes Group.
Market update from AgriTalk here on KASM. We're 16 degrees. Brief look at weather for you today. Chance of snow, otherwise cloudy. We'll see highs touching 20 tonight. Overcast skies. That chance of snow continues later this evening. Lows in the mid-teens tomorrow. Chance for snow early, otherwise overcast. High temperatures touching 20 once again tomorrow night, partly cloudy. Overnight lows approaching 4 degrees, down to single digits on your Thursday night tomorrow. Friday, your holiday weekend kicks off with skies becoming cloudy, highs in the low 20s. We're at 16 right now here in the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council studios, powered by the Soybean Checkoff. This is KASM, AM 1150, FM 107.7, 105.5 HD2, and of course, online, mykasm.com. Back to Shady's Hometown Tavern and Event Center for another great 25 minutes of radio with the Focus on Farming and KASM Farm Director Joe Gill.
Thank you, Kirby Hemish. Kirby Hemish joining us, producing our broadcast back at the KASM Radio studios here today on KASM Radio. Once again, if you have a question, raise your hand, tap Travis on the shoulder. We'll come to you. If you have any questions, just mention your name, where you're from, and who you're addressing your question to as well here today. Feel free to ask here at Shady's Hometown Tavern, Main Street in Albany. And Tom, we're going to start with you in this last segment here. Tom Haig with the Minnesota Corn Growers and National Corn Growers Association. We've heard kind of legislative side of things, industry side. Anything tweaking a bill or ringing an alarm in your head at all regarding corn?
Not so much with just that, but I think the big thing that was a talk last year within our group was the ditch mowing. And, you know, growing up as a young kid right on a major highway, that was one of the major things we did. We went out there and harvested that grain to feed to our cattle and everything like that. And I can't remember once that we ever worried about having a wild pheasant or a duck or anything like that, or worrying about the bees that we destroyed some of their habitat because it would grow back up and it was fine. And one of the nice things was it kept the beauty of driving by of the Highway 55 where I live is it was nice and clean all the time. There was not trees growing there. There wasn't any of the maybe vicious other weeds like wild parsnip that's starting to show up now. So, I mean, that was one of the big things. And then all of a sudden we find out that there's this law that they want us to take care of and be responsible with. So that's just one of the issues there. And there's a few other ones that we're worried about, but with Commissioner Dave on nitrogen rule, but you know, we all had a chance to comment and that'll be coming up. And that's not nothing to do with legislative, that's just to do with corn farmers more. So that'll be an interesting thing to what comes up, and I'm sure we'll be able to agree to work things out with that to make sure that all farmers are treated and be able to put their nitrogen on when they're allowed to or when they're not allowed to.
As we kind of move over to, we talk ditch mowing, Tom Peterson, can you give folks a little background on where this started? Was this, I remember Chris Swazinski in southwestern Minnesota. I don't know if he brought it up or where this all came up. That's kind of where the first initial thing. I know Dustin Hoffman, farm director in Redwood Falls, did a story, and it kind of seemed like it went on fire after that. The day I listened is, how did this all start? How did it all become an issue? And give us a background on what they or how they wanted to regulate farmers on what they initially wanted them to do before we kind of got this stay in this whole situation.
Yeah, Joe, I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. So, you know, the law has been around a long time that actually says you can't mow the ditch until August 1st. And so, but it's not been followed at all, you know, and it's also not been enforced at all because the state really doesn't have an enforcement mechanism to enforce it. So that's what it really gets down to. Farmers know that the quality of the forage before August 1st is ultimate. You know, you don't want to wait till August 1st most years because there's no quality in the forage. You want to control, as Tom said, the aesthetics. Weed control is a huge issue. And so this has been an issue, and MnDOT has, what they did last year is they redid their permit, and they raised a lot of red flags around the first of the year by requiring a permit that had a lot of onus, I think, on farmers and made it very difficult. And so the legislature, farm groups went to work, and what basically we got a moratorium. I really think Senator Westrom worked really hard on this and the Transportation Committee too to make sure that we got this time out where to look at, you know, that farmers are able to mow and take care of their right-of-ways. And so what the legislature also did was, though, they formed a task force that Farmers Union, Farm Bureau, soybean growers are on that is looking at this issue and needs to make recommendations back to the legislature. And so it's an ongoing issue. The one thing I think that, you know, farmers also, as we did the listening sessions, I think, you know, and what I've been trying to see is how much money farmers also save MnDOT in mowing costs. And, you know, farmers clean the ditches before they mow. They pick up a lot of the trash. There's a lot of other variables, as well as safety. Safety is ultimately, the state highway system was built to move people and move people safely. And so it's an ongoing issue, and we'll keep working on it.
So what was it where you had to have like a certain vest on, you had to have a beacon? What was all in that initial want on that end?
Yeah, not only that, you know, the ABDETA permit is that a lot of people just didn't have a permit. And to be fair, what MnDOT wants to know is they say they want to know who is mowing what. And so that is kind of their thought for a permit. But the permit they had, yeah, it said you had to have a hard hat on, you had to have a safety vest, you had to have the beacons on every piece of machinery. Your permit, you had to have so much liability for insurance, and you also had to name the state of Minnesota on that, and so that was also a concern. And so legislators worked on that, Representative Anderson as well, and so to look at just taking a time out on that permit. So as we look forward, some of the things that they're considering, the task force, is a much simpler permit or a notification system. So you'd call in and say, I'm mowing this area, something like that. And not that Farmers Union isn't supporting this, but one of the ideas is to mow one way one year and one way the next year. And or mow, you could mow 50 feet before August 1st or 30 feet or something like that. And we prefer to just keep it like it is, but we'll see how it goes forward.
I know State Representative Paul Anderson as well. Paul, you said really in some instances to maintain some sort of habitat, the road ditch is probably the wrong spot to be doing that, right?
No, that's correct. And especially anybody that drives a motorcycle does not want to have a deer come up out of the ditch. You can't see them. And if those weeds and grasses are tall, to me, we tried to sell this also down at the Capitol as a safety issue, because I don't think a lot of Metro folks really get the feed quality part of not cutting it so late. So talking about the safety aspect, not a place to be encouraging wildlife in a road ditch 10 feet away from a Peterbilt going by at 70 miles an hour. So, and I think the whole thing boils down to the August 1st cutting date. The folks that want to promote this as habitat for bees and pheasants, they really believe that August 1st date is important. And whatever is decided on, nobody's going to be totally happy with it. There's going to be some kind of a compromise. But the big hang-up, I think, is the August 1st cutting date.
Some additional comments. Senator Tory Westrum, if you want to comment as well, Tory.
Well, Joe, I think Paul and Tom have recapped it quite well, but farmers and anybody interested, don't rest on your laurels. I would encourage you to stay active and voice your concerns, as you've done a great job in making this issue come forward, because the permits can be... most farmers don't have an HR staff sitting in the office to file all these permits and make sure they've got the right liability of $1 million or whatever the requirement is. And when we were looking at this at the Senate last year, we asked the question, how many accidents have even happened? And there were so few accidents, and most couldn't even be attributed to the actual bailing the ditch. So the reality is there's not a problem. The permit is in search of a problem, it seemed to us. And so that's why we put a moratorium in place and said, you know what, work with the stakeholders. It seemed like the system has been working pretty well. If there's some tweaks, let's look at it, but let's not make it onerous. Let's not add red tape, because we're interested in making government work for the people. We like the idea that farmers feed this to their livestock. It's a good source of feed. That's a good source of getting our ditches mowed that otherwise get to be a lot of work and a lot of cost for the taxpayers. And so, Joe, we're hoping to have some common sense resolution after this one-year moratorium. And I'm not afraid to put another moratorium in place for another year or two if we have to do that till we come up with a common sense solution so people can mow it at a reasonable date, as well as just go do the job that they do now and not worry about filing a bunch of paperwork and red tape that gets them in trouble otherwise.
Joe, we'll check in with you shortly. Let's take a question. Travis, just state your name and who do you like to direct your question to?
My name is David Brinkman from Painesville area. Troy did just touch on the insurance policy, but what is the reason really that the farmers need that $1 million insurance policy and the state is the beneficiary? And the other part is, let's take those road ditch acres and put it back in CRP where the wildlife really... I'll wait for your answer. Thank you.
Well, I'll answer to the best I can, but I don't want to answer letting you presume that I'm the one proposing it. That's the MnDOT that has came forward I think it was $1 million liability policy minimum, which, some people have. Not everybody does have that, and it costs money to up your policies. The idea is if there was an accident, they just want to make sure there's insurance in place for that you know, if they hit the farm equipment or a hay bale hadn't gotten moved off the ditch fast enough and somebody hit it and there was negligence that could be proven back to the farmer, they want the insurance in place. So that's the reason that we were given, and I understand that they would be pushing for it. But maybe that's too high of a policy. Not every homeowner's or farm policy is at $1 million. And again, getting back to our question about how many accidents have there been, and it's been just about zero over decades. And so it was maybe an overreaction is what we felt to what they were doing. So.
All right, Joe Smentek with Minnesota Soybean.
Yeah, as Tom Peterson stated, I serve on the task force that's been looking at this, and you know we definitely agree that there's no real need for this. There's definitely no real need for the insurance. Obviously, if they knew whose bale it was, they could go back. You know, the state didn't put the bale there. There shouldn't be any need for that insurance. We had a big problem with the damage deposit as well. You know, guys aren't out there when it's wet baling this hay. There's not going to be rutting or damaging the ditch in any way, shape, or form. So trying to, you know, take money out of farmers' pockets and hold on to it was a big problem. Probably the biggest problem that we had from the soybean grower's standpoint on this is, as Tom mentioned, this is a 1980s law. Since the 1980s, there's been five different documents I found authored by state agencies, Department of Agriculture, MPCA, the University of Minnesota Extension, saying that when the legislature passed this law, you know, they specifically wrote in there that a road authority can't mow. They didn't say farmers can't mow. They said a road authority can't. And the way that's been interpreted since 1980 is that if you have an easement on that land, if they only have an easement, you don't need a permit. If the state owns it, fee simple, you have to have a permit. And this new change, they've changed that. They've decided that since 1980, everybody's been interpreting this wrong, and what the legislature really meant is that MnDOT controls all of it, even though they might only own an easement. And that change in what the legislature meant all of a sudden after 30 years, that's really been bugging us, and we hope that the legislature will address that. Since we had three of them sitting here, I had to take the opportunity to put that plug in.
Our Focus on Farming broadcast continues. I know we have some ag lending members too in the audience, so if anybody has a question they want to bring up that they see on their side, a concern or an issue that these folks should be aware of too, I think that'd be some very pertinent information as we continue. And a whole background and a part of this program too is having a chance to bring legislators and ag organization officials here to central Minnesota. I know everybody doesn't have a chance to make it to the state capitol or possibly go to a meeting and such, and that's kind of the whole purpose behind it. And maybe we can start with Michelle and then work our way down. How important, Michelle, is it for you to have folks to, one, come to the Capitol, or two, send you an email or give you a call? How important is that interaction that they kind of take the bull by the horns and tell you what's going on?
It is very important. We keep in contact. We love having people down come to the Capitol. Understand not everybody can come down there, but I will advocate just a little bit. Come on down. It's beautiful. You paid for a lot of remodeling down there in the last couple of years, so please come down and enjoy it. Now, I think it's kind of fun when we're in session, but maybe everybody else will think it's boring, but you can come and decide for yourself if you want to watch session. But it really is important. If there is something going on, and I know a lot of the organizations and associations will keep you up to date on what's going on. And sometimes, you know what, when we're in session, it gets really busy, and I'm dealing with higher ed, Tori's dealing with, you know, ag stuff, and there's a transportation committee. So if there's something you hear about, please give us a call or shoot off an email to us and let us know so that it comes to the top of our radar, because what you're hearing, we don't, you know, we're doing all kinds of other things and don't always hear that. So it's very important if there's some kind of concern you have, and even when we're not in session, please feel free to call, let us know what you're thinking, if you have an idea for something that could be improved, some legislation, or even gotten rid of. Like, there's some things I've heard today, you know, that obviously I think that the ditch mowing did come from a constituent contact originally with Representative Swedinsky and Senator Dames. We shorten names sometimes, so I don't want to call them by their nickname. So those are things that came to a legislator's attention from from the public and a constituent contact that they were called, and now we're taking care of it and we're trying to address it. So please stay in contact with us. It is important. Email is easy, but we still accept letters. We accept phone calls. So you know what? I shop a lot at Teals in Painesville, so if you catch me there, that's fine too. I shouldn't maybe do a plug, should I?
You
at the
go
grocery
right
store in Painesville. but we're around, so please, if you think of something, let us know and always stay in contact with us. It's very, really important to us.
I know a couple of the past years, I think 2 years too, Chasm Radio, we've done a Chasm Cares About Agriculture. And really, it's something as simple. I drive my minivan with three other people, and we go down to the Capitol. We have a chance. We visited with Paul, with Dave, and it may sound very simple, very minor, very small, but I think it still makes an impact to introduce a few of those folks into what really goes on. And I think it kind of puts it on your shoulders, whether you're in the FFA or a farmer for many years. You know, a little thing is a big thing in a certain manner as well. Paul?
Yeah, it certainly is. And I would agree with what Senator Fischbach said. And also that a lot of ideas that we get for legislation comes from talking to constituents, hearing from them. Emails are great, easy to answer those. And all of us try to answer all the emails we get from our constituents. And yeah, come on down. It's a great place to visit. Parking can be an issue sometimes, but it's your state capital. But we'd love to hear from you. And on some of the bigger issues, we have to kind of gauge and guess what our constituents are wanting. So the best way to do that is to kind of gauge the messages we get from you. So it is important, and keep it up. Keep talking with us. We have emails, phones and cell phones, things like that. So keep in touch with us. Thanks.
We have about 7 minutes remaining here. I'd like to go down the line, Tom, too, from a farmers union aspect, too. Just being active in an organization, whether it's farmers union or possibly farm bureau, corn growers, soybean growers, those relationships can be very beneficial.
Absolutely. And I think from a farmers union perspective, we really value our members. And I don't a lot of times know there's a problem till I hear there's a problem. So hearing from farmers is very important. I get calls at 7 o'clock in the morning a lot of times from farmers saying, you know, things about the buffer laws or pieces like that. And so it's very important because, you know, farmers can't make it to the Capitol, as you said, and that's the kind of the role of farm organizations at the Capitol. The other thing I just want to mention too that I think is changing very quickly, and Chasm, Joe, you do a great job of that, is using social media, Facebook, Twitter for updates and pieces. And if you really want to follow along, those are great new technologies that have really changed in the last few years. If you want to, you can't be there, but you want to get more information. So excellent piece as well.
Tori Westrom, we'll get a few of your comments as well, Tori.
Well, Joe, I think I'd echo what everybody said here. Because we can't read people's minds. We don't know what's all going on. So it's just that important to let us know. The Minlar system, that's how I became aware, as did so many legislators across the state with these title problems with vehicles. And I've got truck dealers selling farm trucks that are saying they got to lay people off here if we can't get this fixed, because they've been trying to sell vehicles and the buyers are getting irritated because they can't get the final paperwork back. And so that's how we find out. And so... lastly, I just want to thank Minnesota Milk and all the groups that advocate. But this past year, I was honored to receive the Legislator of the Year Award by Minnesota Milk this past November. And it's just great to advocate for groups. But that's what those groups do for the listening audience, for those feeding the cows, milking the cows, doing the field work, doing their jobs, whatever it is. Those organizations are down working with us and hearing from their members as well, and bringing those issues to us. And that's what our ultimate job is, to try to solve those problems, use some common sense, and just good old farm logic.
We also see Lisa Gretsch as well, Producer of the Year as well. They were honored, recognized this year. Lisa, you got a question?
I do. You were saying that you just want us to let you know what our concerns are. Excuse me. There's concerns going into 2018, obviously, with the low milk prices. The futures are there. They're showing us that it's going to be a concern. Some of the plants, like Steve had talked about, are making, are doing expansions and trying to create more space for all that milk. The exports are obviously a big concern, but what I want you to know is how important this farm bill is going to be. And MPP is not going to help anybody in the 2018 the way it's looking. Gross dairy margins is always a scary thing for some of us. We're not all educated on the calls and all that and how to handle all that. So to not let that farm bill go longer, you know, get it passed so we can make some changes. And as you talked about some of the financial institutions, I'm on a board at a local bank, and our newest thing now is to secure those lines of credit with real estate as well as just your chattel. And so they're seeing it as well. They know this is coming. So we need to, and I'm not sure there's a safety net for us for 2018. And it's scaring a bunch of us, not just me, but a whole bunch of people. And there's people that are quitting because they're selling their farms because they don't see it getting any better. And that's scary, and it's challenging. And I know it takes a long time to get these bills through and to get things done. But I want to encourage you to know how very important to get those things done on a timely basis is going to be for us.
All right, Lisa, thank you very much. Lisa Gretsch here on Chasm Radio, and once again, Producers of the Year this year by Minnesota Milk announced as well on their farm. As we kind of make our way to, if Joel, too, if you just want to mention, too, input from folks, whether you're a soybean farmer, too, being a part of an organization, just your aspect and why it's important to be involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything that we do at the Capitol, we do because of what our members tell us to do. So if they're not active in telling us what challenges they're facing, we don't know. I'm not a farmer. Me and the lobbyists aren't farmers. So you know, we really depend on that feedback. We depend on those membership dollars to actually get our advocacy done. The way our checkoff works, we can't use checkoff dollars for that. So I know that gets confusing and frustrating sometimes. But definitely, you know, we have a national organization we work with. We've been working on the farm bill quite a while. I know Kevin's been working on that as well with Farmers Union and Corn. And really, you know, being a member of any one of those ag groups is very important because we do really work together. We work together a lot at the Capitol. When the Farmers Union has an issue, we usually all chip in and help with that. If I bring up an issue, everybody's good to help with those issues. So communicating with those folks, letting them know, whoever you're comfortable with, what your issues are facing and what we can work on, we're all stronger when we work together.
Also, Tom, I'll get your final comments as well. Very important to be working together with everybody.
Very much so, Joe, and thank you, because all the organizations were grassroots. We start from the bottom, work our way to the top. And as you get involved with these organizations, then you find out how much we're only 1.5% of the population. And it's just like our politicians mentioned, if we don't contact them and let them know we think it's okay, the environmental groups are out there every day, especially at the national level, pounding emails to those politicians. So we're far behind that. So it is important to be involved. Get involved. You can look up on the internet the politicians to get hold of their email. And like Stephen mentioned, by phone or whatever. But it's important to be involved. It's important that you talk because, like I say, if we don't talk, we're on the bad end.
And Dan Glessing, you know, Dan, you had better things to do than get up 2 hours early to do chores this morning and make your way up here. But once again, you see it's important to do so and be visible and be vocal. Some of the words I like to use, it's important to do so, right, Dan?
Yeah, I can't think of any way I'd rather spend my anniversary than getting up 2 hours early.
Boy, there is a flower shop down the street here.
I will need that
after
this. But
there is a funeral home, too, but that's a whole different conversation. So
kind of right there, isn't it?
Yeah.
But no. You know, a nice way that Farm Bureau encourages our members is days on the hill. Get down there, visit with them so they can put a face with the name. And also we like to encourage FFA members to come with us down there to see the process, kind of start that spark, if you will. And then that's one way that we do it.
And Steve Schlungen as well. We're down to our few final 2 minutes here. And Steve, I don't even know how many titles you have or how many groups or boards you're on, but being active and being involved, you went head first into this, and obviously you see its importance with it too.
Well, I think it all started out about 26 years ago when I didn't say no, and one thing led to another. But I guess I've really learned to appreciate over the years how much difference you can actually make. if you show up and you get your voice heard, you stay connected with the right people that have positions of whatever you would call it, so they can make things happen. They need to hear from us. And we've seen it happen at the state level. We've seen it happen at the federal level. You know, like they said here, we're only like 1 or 2% of the population, and we're outnumbered big time, but we got to make sure we stand up for what we need out in the country, because we're a huge part of the economic engine of this state or of this whole country. And with trade growing, I think we could be a supplier to many parts of the world with what we produce, and it's all renewable stuff. So it could bring a lot of money back into this country, which would be good for everyone. So I guess we really appreciate what our representatives and senators do for us in the state. And at the federal level, I mean, without been nice to have Colin Peterson here, because he's been a champion for us, especially for dairy. And we're going to be working hard to try to get the MPP renewed and improved big time for the next farm bill. And hopefully we won't bottom out too low in the first half of this coming year, like the forecast shows. But we'll see what happens. But
and Kevin Papp, what do you always say? If you're not at the table, where are you? You're on the menu, so be at the table, otherwise you're on the menu. Dave, I'll give you our final 35 seconds. Don't go over, but we'll kind of get your closing comments here, Dave.
I'm going to help you out, what they said.
Thanks, Dave, once again. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you for taking time and showing up and being here, a part of our first annual panel. Hopefully it's many more down the road. So thanks again. Thank everybody for being here. Please clap for our folks, as we appreciate their input this morning on our first ever Focus on Farming live show from Shady's Hometown Tavern in Albany. Thank you to Stearns Bank Albany, Midsota Manufacturing and Avon, and Compeer Financial in Way Park. Kirby Hemish, will send it back to you at the Chasm Radio Studios.
Well, thank you very much, Joe Gill, and a fantastic edition. The first of, hopefully, as he said, many Focus on Farmings. Well done, and a big thank you to Shady's of Albany, and a big thank you to Joe Gill, quarterbacking that whole thing. Nobody QBs like our Joe Gill. It is 11 o'clock, a little after the hour of 11 o'clock. This is Chasm Radio.
Broadcasting from the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council studio, powered by the Soybean Checkoff, you're listening to your dependable neighbor, AM 1150 KASM Albany, FM 105.5 HD2 KDDG Albany, and KASM Albany on FM 107.7 day and night.
Chasm's top of the hour update. Everything you need to know. It's our home, too. Stand by.
News at 11 brought to you by Dan Wedley, Southtown Community Technology Center, AMPS of Albany, and Becker City Sanitations.
NBC News Radio, I'm Bill Zimper. President Trump is ready to declare victory on tax reform. The White